morning, everyone, and welcome to The Art of Peace, a podcast bringing peace to your neighborhood through the airwaves, powered by the International Peace Youth Group. Here at The Art of Peace, we aim to create a platform where we can have discussions with people from different backgrounds and organizations to help foster mutual understanding and promote activities that are building sustainable peace in our communities. Welcome back this morning for another episode of The Art of Peace. My name is Matt, and I'm your host here on the show. This week, we'll be taking a look into one of the big focuses of the peace work that the International Peace Youth Group is involved in, both here and around the world. This morning, I am joined by two of my friends and fellow volunteers from IPYG, who we will be speaking with today about one of the big aspects of this peace work that IPYG does. Welcome, Chloe and Alicia.
Hi, Matt.
Morning.
Hey, guys. Really good to have you guys here. Before we get into it, could you guys maybe introduce yourselves so the listeners at home can, or on the road can, you know, get to know you guys a bit better? Maybe Chloe, you go first.
Yep. So, hi, I'm Chloe. I have been volunteering with IPYG for about 5 years now. I found out through a friend, and the first thing I took part in was a peace walk, and that was an amazing experience. Just the atmosphere and all working together for this one great purpose of peace, which is something I'd never done before and never really thought was possible. And as I learned more about the United Nations and the difference that things like laws and policies can make on the citizens, then I became more and more passionate about the work and about the declaration we'll be talking about today in particular. So yeah, 5 years later, here I am and still loving it.
That's awesome. That's really cool. What about you, Alicia?
So I started getting involved with peace organizations back home because I'm originally from France, but I felt like I wasn't doing anything practical and peace just remained this dream that was still somehow unachievable. So when I came to New Zealand, I was looking through Instagram and I came across IPYG and I just thought they had an event, so I just decided to attend. And then I attended another one, and through talking with other volunteers, I decided to get involved. It just came naturally because I felt like it was very practical. They were actually doing things to make peace a reality, and that's really why I wanted to get involved. And I've been an IPYG volunteer for over a year now. So, yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. That's really great. So, right into it. You mentioned in just before about the declaration. What is this declaration?
So what I was talking about is the Declaration of Peace and Cessation of War. This is a proposed international declaration with 10 articles and 38 clauses, with ultimately the purpose of ceasing all wars and achieving sustainable peace. This was drafted by a team of international legal experts from 15 countries around the world, and it was proclaimed on the 14th of March in 2016. And since then, we've been all about raising awareness and also putting the principles into action in the community as well.
That's really awesome. That's quite impressive that it's been put together by international law experts from many different countries rather than just one. I think that's really cool. Could you maybe tell us a bit more about what it is?
Yep. So basically, the purpose of it is to replace the rule of war with the rule of law, and to ultimately ensure that the generations to come don't need to grow up in a world where war is a normal thing that we see on the news, or, you know, that some people have to experience in their childhood or in their youth. If you want to know more about what a declaration actually is, it's a statement recognizing a universally valid principle. So it's not legally binding in itself, but it does have an authoritative moral force. An example that we could refer to is the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which most people are familiar with. So this in itself is not legally binding, but it has become familiar universally. And now many treaties and other laws and policies have been built on top of this declaration. So it's kind of become the declaration that protects human rights around the world. So in the same way, I guess that's our hope for this declaration of peace and cessation of war, that on top of this, that many laws and policies can be built on all the countries around the world, and this can be like a protector of peace for all of us.
That's awesome. As I'm sure many people know about, there's many different laws, international laws that are, you know, all around the world and things like that. So what makes the Declaration of Peace and Cessation of War, you know, DPCW for short. What makes it different to what is already out there?
That's a very valid question, and we actually get it quite a lot. But I guess the main difference is how it's split. So on one hand, we have Articles 1 to 7, and they focus more on the role of states. So what states can do to create a peaceful environment, to leave a legacy of peace for future generations, like Chloe mentioned. And then we have Articles 8 to 10, and their focus is more on the civil society. So it really aims to include every single person and how everyone can play and actually needs to play a part in making peace a reality. But why this separation? Why having states on one hand and then civil society on the other? Well, first, without the support of state actors, then this declaration is just a piece of paper, right? So that's why actually the declaration has been drafted in such a way that it actually builds upon existing laws. So states have already agreed to this while also striving to progress international law. And actually, the International Law Peace Committee also recognized that getting support from people, from the civil society, is really essential, actually, to the success of the DPCW. But more than mere support, it also really needs active participation. And yes, it is quite easy to wonder why. Why yet another international law? And especially when we have the UN Charter, which already sets limitation regarding the use of force. So, for example, it is Article 2, Paragraph 4, which actually makes war illegal. And the Charter did succeed in reducing the frequency of war, but now it is more than 75 years old. So the thing is, the way people make war now is just different. And some problems have only recently emerged, especially with how much technology we now have and how easy it is to access it. So basically, we just need an updated solution, just because conflicts don't occur the same way that they used to. And also, the Charter framework actually failed to ensure the responsible use of force in Iraq, for example, or Syria, or the former Yugoslavia as well. So in short, it just the DPCW really aims to be a response to these shortcomings.
Awesome. I think it's really cool as well. You mentioned that it consolidates, and I think that's something that's, you know, really key in regards to it from what you guys have been saying, is that yes, there are lots of existing laws, but as you mentioned, Alicia, these laws are 75 years old. The way we wage war now is very different to the way, you know, people in our grandparents' generation wage war. You know, we're not having, you know, the battles in the trenches anymore. It's much different. You know, we have guerrilla warfare, we have biological warfare and chemical warfare, terrorism. And all of these things, you know, weren't necessarily, you know, there were obviously cases of it still, but it wasn't a common practice. War back then was more tanks and men with guns storming the beach and things like that, like all the movies, you know, show us. That's really, you know, I think really amazing as well what you guys are talking about in relation to what it does and, you know, how there's that divide. So, firstly, I guess we'll, you know, could we look at Articles 1 to 7? You mentioned that was around the state stuff. Could you, you know, show us or give us some examples of what that, you know, practically looks like? You know, what does that mean? You know, it's for the states. Okay, cool. But what does that mean?
Yes. So for Articles 1 to 7, there are actually two main focuses, I would say. And the first one is conflict prevention and the second, conflict mediation. So they kind of speak for themselves, but conflict prevention, how can we avoid conflict in the first place? How can we peacefully solve it? And then conflict mediation, again, how can we, through peaceful ways, avoid needing to use war as a way of solving it? So a practical example could be Article 2 and its title, War Potential. So a quick summary, this article is about how states need to gradually reduce the cost and also materials used for wars. So it mentions specific types of weapons and also suggests practical measures to reduce the armament. But that just wouldn't be done for the sake of it, because there is actually much greater purpose and idea behind it. The purpose would be for all weapons, once they're destroyed, to then be recycled for the benefit of humanity. And this way, getting rid of weapons could be a productive way to contribute to humanity, and not just from, I would say, a humanitarian point of view, but also from an economic point of view. And there are actually a few examples of initiatives around the world to repurpose weapons. So the first one is a Mexican artist, Pedro Reyes, who collected over 1,500 guns and melted them down to then create shovels that were then distributed to schools and also art institutions to be used to plant trees. Another example could be the police department in New Haven, Connecticut, who held an event where people could donate their gun and exchange they would receive a gift card. And then these guns were transformed into gardening tools. Another example is the London Stadium, who was made of over 52 tons of scrap metals. For example, old keys, knives, and guns. But I guess recent examples of why these articles are relevant, again, focusing on article two, war potential. First one could actually be New Zealand. After the Christchurch mosque shooting in March 2019, the government banned assault weapons. And to quote MP Ardern, the purpose was to prevent an act of terror from ever happening again in our country. Another example could be Canada. From earlier last year in May, there was a mass killing in Nova Scotia. And right after the tragedy, PM Trudeau announced that the government would immediately ban around 1,500 models of military-grade assault-style weapons. So it's mostly just rifles. Mm-hmm. Now, these measures are great, obviously, and they helped prevent more tragedies from occurring. But we don't want to wait for yet another shooting or yet another attack to happen to take measures to ensure the safety of a country and its people. So if the UN decided to approve the DPCW and if states decided to actually abide by it, then we could really do everything possible to ensure that such events don't happen ever again. And we could actually start working towards it right now. So basically, there are two focuses, as I said, conflict prevention and mediation, and also focuses on the importance of educating first and just avoid having to use force and violence to solve conflicts.
Mm. That's really awesome. And I think what you were saying about how, you know, we have these examples, you know, even in New Zealand of, you know, when we had the mosque shooting a couple of years ago and then the reaction to that being banning all guns. You know, and I'm sure, I mean, I was surprised that, you know, that was even, you know, allowed in the first place. You know, it's you know, I was really surprised that it was, you know, allowed in the first place. But it was really cool to see that, you know, in such a short amount of time, it was resolved. But I think, you know, what you're saying is really true. It's not about reacting. It's about the actual preventing in the first place. You know, how many people need to be killed in such horrible ways for people to actually be like, oh, maybe this isn't the best idea. So thank you guys so much. That's, I think, really amazing. The first part, you know, of what you guys were talking about, the Articles 1 to 7 being, you know, for the state. What I'm really interested in, and I'm sure what a lot more people are interested in as well, is the second part, the Articles 8, 9, and 10, which will be quite different to hear about that sort of, those sorts of articles, you know, compared to all the state ones. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Chloe and Alicia to talk about Articles 8, 9, and 10, if that's okay with you guys.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Sounds good.
That would be great. Cool. So this is Counting Stars by One Republic.
Lately, I've been losing sleep, dreaming about the things a week will be. But baby, I've been praying hard, said no more counting dollars, we'll be counting stars. Yeah, we'll be counting stars. Swing my heart across the line, in my face is flashing signs. Seek it out and ye shall find. Old, but I'm not that old. Young, but I'm not that bold. And I don't think the world is sold. I'm just doing what we're told. I feel something so right. Doing the wrong thing. It's
kills me, makes me feel alive.
Back, everyone. I'm joined still with Chloe and Alicia from IPYG. Before the break, we spoke a lot about the Declaration of Peace and Cessation of War, and in particular, we focused on Articles 1 through 7, which was around state involvement and what the state, you know, state responsibility and things like that when it came to peace and cessation of war. Now, I'd really like for us to delve into Articles 8 to 10, the second half of the Declaration, or the second part of it, rather. And you guys mentioned before the break that Articles 8 to 10 are different from what is currently in place around the world. How so?
So Articles 8 to 10 are all about achieving sustainable peace for everyone in the world. So they focus very much on addressing root causes, as well as educating and increasing peace activities and initiatives within society.
That's really cool. As a volunteer myself, I know how that can sound to a lot of people, how, you know, we're trying to achieve sustainable peace. No small task, and something that, you know, is really exciting nonetheless. Could you maybe go into a little bit more about what each of these articles are?
Yeah, absolutely. So Article 8 is titled Freedom of Religion, and this article emphasizes the importance of a global dialogue for the promotion of tolerance and peace at all levels, as well as ensuring that discrimination based on belief or religion can no longer take place. And of course, that religion can't be used by any group as a means for violence. What this looks like practically at the moment, our parent organization, HWPL, is putting this into practice through their religious dialogues that take place all over the world. And this is a chance for religious leaders to gather and have peaceful discussions based on their scriptures in order to understand more about other religions, resolve misunderstandings, and ultimately to realize the common goal of peace across all religions and work together.
That's fantastic. I think it's something so so cool to have people from different religions sitting down in the same room and just having a yarn about what it is they believe. You know, because I think one of the biggest issues, and I think one of the biggest issues that people come across and face is how they don't understand. And when you don't understand something, you get a little afraid and you get a little concerned or whatever. You have those sorts of thoughts. But once you actually have a chat to someone and realize, wow, actually they're just like me, or wow, what they believe is actually really similar to what I believe, you know, even if it's a, you know, entirely different religion, I think it's really, really fantastic. That's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. And just wanted to mention, some people wonder, like, you know, why is religion in this at all? But I'm sure we're all aware that religion has been a factor in many wars and conflicts across the world. And I guess we've even seen that in our own backyard in the last couple of years with the mosque shootings. And yeah, I guess showing that there is still discrimination, there is still many misunderstandings which can lead to conflict and violence in certain situations. So if we're addressing the root causes, then religious understanding is a really important place to start.
Definitely. I think when we can all understand each other, then there's going to be much less of those, you know, hate-based or fear, you know, fear-based, essentially, acts of violence and discrimination. And, you know, peace is not just for any one group of people, it's for everyone. And, you know, all the religions talk about it, from my understanding anyway. So, yeah, it's that's really amazing. Maybe we can. So that was Article 8. What about Article 9?
So Article 9, I'll just touch on briefly. It's titled Religion, Ethnic Identity and Peace. And again, this is very much focusing on resolving the root causes of religious and ethnic conflict through adopting measures to promote mutual understanding. So promoting mutual understanding rather than solving conflicts through violent means. And also it condemns violent extremism in the name of religion.
Awesome. Okay, cool. So that was Article 8 and 9. So let's move on to Article 10. And I know Article 10 is I know my personal favourite when it comes to this, and I'm sure we all feel much the same. Could you tell us a bit about Article 10 and what it's all about?
Yes. So Article 10 is titled Spreading a Culture of Peace. My personal favourite as well. And actually it's what we're doing right now. We're gathering together and we're spreading the message of peace through the radio waves. So this article gives responsibility to states to promote a culture of peace and to ensure there are the right conditions to allow people to have things like equal participation in political affairs, a free media, peace education. It also encourages increasing peace awareness and supporting more activities and groups who promote peace. So actually every country that IPYG is working in around the world is carrying out all sorts of different peace activities to increase peace awareness among the general citizens based on the needs of each country. And this is really important. Like I mentioned, achieving this sustainable peace, well, to achieve that, there needs to be a change to every person. We all need to, I guess, be exhibiting the qualities of a peaceful citizen every day, have a mindset that wants to achieve peace and spread peace and have this culture around us and among us. And so that's what Article 10 is all about. And specifically, yeah, through peace education, even bringing the younger generations up, having that mutual understanding of other beliefs, religions, ethnicities, and also what it means to be a peaceful citizen in this world. So for us in Aotearoa, our focus in terms of peace initiatives that we're doing is largely based on mental health, the inner war. We also focus on increasing understanding among different cultures and ethnicities as well, being that, you know, Auckland is a hugely diverse city and New Zealand is a hugely diverse country. So those conversations are really necessary to have so that we can be at peace among one another. We also, yeah, even do things with relation to climate change as well, which is something that is really concerning to young people these days and something people are really worried and anxious about. So, one example that we're doing at the moment, we've recently launched the Peace District Initiative, which will include workshops, cleanups, volunteering, and other things in South Auckland specifically. And through this, we hope to bring more unity, hope, and small steps of transformation to some of the needs that we can currently see in the community.
That's awesome. I know last week we had another one of the volunteers in, and we spoke a little bit about, you know, the Peace District and what it was about and sort of the future of that as well. So hopefully that'll start to really, you know, kick off, and, you know, we'll be able to really see, you know, really positive change happening in the communities. And I think, you know, mental health, I think one of the biggest issues I've found when talking to New Zealanders about this idea of peace is that New Zealanders are like, well, we don't have war here. But we do have that, as you said, I think that's a really cool way of explaining it, is that inner war, you know, that mental health, you know, that's one of the biggest issues I think New Zealanders of all ages face. So that's really cool. Now, I think we're really lucky that you're here with us today, Chloe, because you mentioned that you've been a part of IPYG in New Zealand since pretty much the beginning of the work here in NZ. Could you maybe share some of your, I guess, favourite memories of, you know, the work that's happened?
For sure. It's been a wild ride, lots of fun, doing lots of things that I never actually thought that I would do, talking to lots of people that I never thought that I would talk to, from all different sectors, politicians and community leaders, and talking to them and having discussions about how we can really spread this work and create changes within the community. One of my favourite memories, though, was a peace walk that we did at Matatua Marae in Mangere. It was raining on this day, which I was a bit upset about, but actually it really added to the environment. There was puddles everywhere, but everyone was just so happy and so united. We were shouting against bullying that day and promoting peace. And there was only about 100 of us, but it was really a powerful moment of, yeah, feeling that unity for one cause. And I just felt like, wow, you know, imagine if we can see all New Zealanders doing this one day, or imagine if we can see this happening as like a really regular thing. I guess it just gave me a lot of hope that this can become the norm, and just showed me what can happen when many people join together for one cause, that creates a ripple effect that can really cause change. So it's exciting. And every year our events get bigger and we can do more. And so, yeah, it's small steps, but we've made a lot of progress even in the 5 years we have been working here in New Zealand. So exciting times ahead.
Awesome. I'm really looking forward to that. Well, I think that just about does us for today. Thank you guys so much. Could you maybe, is there anything you guys want to say to conclude or to summarize or anything like that? Oh, the floor is yours, so to speak.
So in summary, like I said, it's small steps and there is a long journey ahead. But what's amazing about the Declaration of Peace and Cessation of War is that it seeks to achieve true, sustainable peace through addressing root causes and educating citizens and the younger generations, so each and every person can become a peacemaker in their own home and their community. Also through the Global Legislate Peace campaign, more and more citizens are becoming aware of the principles of this declaration. And through that awareness, we can also keep the government accountable to these laws and participate in ensuring that they're actually implemented. So this is really bringing the power back to the people and creating a change that can carry on down to the future generations. So yeah, really excited the part that we're playing as IPYG New Zealand. And hopefully, you know, even if just a few more people can learn about the DPCW through this radio show, then that's an awesome step. And if you have any questions and things, we'd love to talk to you as well.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. Thanks so much, Alicia and Chloe, for coming today. It was really great to hear from you guys and to really you know, unpack this in a bit more detail than what we normally get the chance to. That was really cool. Well, that's us for this week on The Art of Peace. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. And if you guys have any questions, do feel free to contact us at The Art of Peace NZ on Instagram or at IPYG NZ on Instagram as well. Yeah, I hope you guys have a great rest of the day and we'll catch you all next week. You've been listening to The Art of Peace by IPYG. Special thanks to our peace family at the International Peace Youth Group and Planet FM Public Access Radio who make this happen. To get involved with the peace work, or if you have any questions, you can hit us up at IPYGNZ on Instagram. Join us again next Monday at 9:05 or visit the Planet FM website under the Art of Peace page to listen anytime, anywhere. Until next time, peace out.